Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is artist, illustrator, writer, Bishak Somm, and we're talking about the graphic story collection, Apsara Engine. Bishak, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real honor.
I taught comics, and I'm passionate about comic and graphic novels. And it's so rarely that I come across something where the art style and the stories are so different, so unique, and so wonderful, too. And I want to congratulate you on this collection. Now, these stories aren't related in this book, are they?
Originally, no.
They got related after you published them? That's wild.
Well, as the book took shape, yes. Okay. They started becoming more and more sort of tangled together.
That's
maybe
interesting.
Maybe sort of unbeknownst to me. They started life, some of the stories started life as mini comics, which I would sell at conventions. And at some point I had enough work that it started to, you know, enough work as a collection that it started to look like it could be a book. And as I wrote more and more stories to make it a bigger book, you know, the stories themselves weren't related to each other directly, but there are elements that seemed to seep through each story as I wrote them. So, yeah, in the end, it became more of a cohesive whole, much more so than I would have thought.
It's amazing because many of these stories are about person-to-person interactions, human interactions,
and
you love conversations.
I do.
When I started reading these, they seemed almost like storyboards for a film that you would make.
Mm.
Have you ever thought about filming any of these?
In sort of idle moments when I'm daydreaming.
I'm not talking even animation. I'm talking just
like
regular films because they're really wonderful conversations. Like you really have an ear for what people say and how they move together, and then unexpected stuff comes up.
Thank you. Yeah, I do sometimes think when filming when I'm drawing these like scenes that are extended conversations, I do tend to think quite filmically.
Yeah.
Because you know this idea of like point of view and having one person's back while the showing one person in the foreground whose back you see while you see the other person talking. And reverse shots and things like this, you know, to keep the continuity going and stuff. So I do tend to think that way when I'm writing these, but then sometimes I like to have that as a sort of base note and then to break out of that with something completely not filmic at all, you know. So, yeah, I like to operate on both modes, I guess.
Let's talk about the title, Apsara Engine.
Sure.
When I think about Apsaras, I think about spirits of the clouds, celestial nymphs in Hindu. Talk to me about what it means to you.
So, as you say, these celestial nymphs of Hindu and Buddhist mythology are not deities, you know, they're not like foregrounded as characters that one should pay attention to in the way that you would have paid attention to, you know, Krishna or Durga.
Yep.
Or, you know.
Yep.
So, but they're also these very like mischief-making feminine energies, you know? And so that's what I wanted to channel and what I wanted to foreground. And I think the characters in the book, to one degree or another, represent that kind of femme energy. And, you know, by dint of who I am as a trans woman, they also represent a kind of queer femme energy, whether or not it's explicit or whether it's sort of unearthed. That's the kind of, tendency or like energy that I was trying to tap into.
I think that might explain the tone of the stories because they feel really different and unique. And that's what's refreshing about them. I mean, they're really, really sort of not stuff you've read before. And if you've read a lot of comics, it's so nice to come across something that's got a different kind of expression.
I was, yeah. I mean, I I tried to, like, I don't know how actively I was trying to express a sort of unique or different voice. Sometimes it sort of came naturally to me because I don't like to write very conventional stories, and that kind of necessarily requires a somewhat unconventional mode of telling a certain story. And then sometimes, as you were saying, you know, I fall into like these very conversational patterns, which are a little more conventional in tone and in mode than the other stories. So I guess, it operates on many different levels and in different strategies, I guess.
When you start a story, let's say like Mina and Parna, are you clear about what you're going to do at the end, or does the story evolve as you're drawing it? Or does it just vary from story to story?
It does vary from story to story. I'm trying to remember when I wrote that story, what I was thinking, or what.
Because a lot of surprising things happen, like the the buying of the dress and which was kind of really funny, and it just sort of seemed to sort of flow in ways that were unexpected. And I just wanted to know if you suddenly got to a point and went, I think I'm going to do something totally different.
I wish I could talk to my 2015 self. I actually
Would make for great radio.
But we could just dial her up.
Right.
What I remember is that Mina and Aparna was one of the first stories I started writing when I quit my job, and I wanted to write a longer narrative. I'd been doing 20-page stories, so I wanted to do a 40-page story with a lot of conversation, as you were saying. And I think that the only way I could manage that was to write a script, write all the text out, which I hadn't been doing so much before that. And I think writing the script made it a lot more deliberate than I might have, than the way I might have approached another more unconventional story. So I do remember trying, like, working on the script and using a part of my brain that is a little not as used in terms of being a comics artist. It felt like I felt a little foreign, just sitting, typing, writing the story on my laptop. But the choices I made, I think, because I had to write it out, became much more deliberate. And it was a lot more sort of tightly choreographed than it might have done had I not written the script.
You have such an ear for conversation. Are you one of those people that, like, you're at a party and you've got a notebook? And you're like,
you're not
in a diner overhearing people's conversations and then writing it down?
No. I mean, I do go and sketch people sometimes, but only very, very occasionally and very briefly.
Yeah.
I think that all that comes from just absorbing things sort of passively. It's like osmosis, it just sort of seeps in. I'm not sure why. I love to talk with people.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. I don't know where that comes from. I just enjoy the English language, and I enjoy how people are able to communicate with each other and in novel ways without using cliches, without resorting to crutches like that. So I don't know. I really love and that's, part of what's kind of sad now is that lack of interaction is so absent. So I don't know.
Well, it's not just conversation. It's these interactions between people who care about each other.
Yeah.
But things aren't necessarily going smoothly or the way that they thought it was going to be scripted. And that's what you seem to hone in on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some of this is stuff that came up afterwards. And in Mina and Aparna, I guess there's aspects to their friendship which suddenly start bubbling up, coming to the surface in a way that neither of them would have expected. So I guess, that's what I was trying to get at with that story. But I was also indulging in a level of banter between them, which I thought was really soothing. Just spending time with these two characters.
Right. I wanted to get to know them beyond the comic.
Yeah, I would love to do another story with those characters to see where it goes.
Yeah.
What, you know, and what happens with them, because so much is left unanswered or unsaid in that story that you wonder, like, where is this friendship going to go? Is it going to turn into something else? Or, you know, who knows?
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is artist, illustrator, writer, Bishak Somm. And we're talking about the graphic story collection that is your latest, Apsara Engine. It's a beautiful piece of work. Whenever I talk to an artist, I'm always interested about their evolution as an artist from back from childhood. Are you one of those people who like was drawing all the time as a kid? Or when did the impulse to create visual stories start with you?
Absolutely. It started as a child. I think most children, I don't interact with that many right now, but I think a lot of them start by drawing, right? I mean, that's a sort of very specific tool in terms of your development as a person, you know, and I just never gave it up. I think the first time I started drawing comics was in like the third grade, and me and like three other kids would just start drawing, you know, making up random characters and drawing these very silly adventures on sheets of newsprint.
Did you go through a superhero stage?
I did, but that was later on. I got really into Marvel and
You did. Okay, that was my next question. So talk to me about some of your, because reading these, I can't believe, it's hard to believe that you went through a superhero stage, but I think that's like everybody goes through that. And right. So who were characters that were big for you?
I was initially really into Spider-Man.
Everybody, I love Spider-Man
yeah,
too.
It's like a rite of passage.
Yeah.
But I think later on, I mean, again, and that's sort of very obvious, touchstone was the X-Men, but I guess, you know, you can maybe the one thread that you can maybe see is like I was really into Phoenix as a character, or and Dark Phoenix, you know, and that sort of like goddess energy that she embodied. So I was really into that. I also learned to draw a little bit from things like How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. So
okay.
Yeah, I mean, I took a lot away from that, as not so much for the content of the superhero comics, but the form, the anatomy, perspective, things like this, you know. So yeah, it was very useful for me. But
well, what's interesting, and when I talk to artists, their life then goes up in usually another direction entirely, and then something brings them back.
Yeah.
To their original passion. So what was your story? You didn't follow a straight line trajectory to become an artist.
No, my parents wanted me to become a doctor, so I tried that for, you know, like every good Indian girl.
Oh, my God.
I know, but guess who failed at that spectacularly? Me. And what I decided to do, because they wanted me to do something sort of serious, was to approach architecture, because it embodied both art and science and was sort of a respectable profession, you know. So that's what I ended up doing. I went to graduate school to study architecture, and I was in the field for many years practicing it. But the more I did it, the unhappier I became, until I think it was like in 2011 or 12 when things just sort of came to a head. And, you know, the circumstances coalesced, and it seemed like the perfect time for me to just get out of that situation. And it also seemed like the perfect time to try my hand at writing a whole book, you know? So that's when I quit, and I said, I am not good at architecture. I know I'm good at drawing and writing, so I'm going to try this and see if I can, you know, make a book.
What's interesting, Bishak, is that architecture features in some of your work, and really interesting architecture, not traditional architecture at all. And on your website, there are definitely, it's really funny, there's some definite just right on, straight on architectural drawings.
Those are from my professional days as an architect, which, you know, I mean, there are remnants of my past and my psyche, so they're still in there.
Well, I want to talk about, because one really magical part of this book. I think it's Swan Dive.
Yes.
There's an act of creating a map.
Yes.
That's. Can you talk about that? Because that was really special for me reading that.
Thank you. That's a special story for me, too. And it comes out of, I think, what brought me to architecture in the first place was this sort of, like, real fetishistic obsession with maps and with plans and that form of representation. So, like, when I was a kid, I loved just, like, looking at maps of cities that my parents and I would, like, be planning to go to, and then just imagining what this would look like in real life, sometimes not even wondering, because the map itself was like this magical document and I didn't even need the city. And I think that, you know, there's a straight sort of through line from that to Swan Dive, because I also started like drawing maps of imaginary cities, which I still do. And I wanted to sort of create a, you know, sort of weave a thread between that idea of cartography, of imaginary cartography as an act of creativity, and the way that queer and trans people are sometimes forced to create their own situations, their own cultures and contexts. You know, it's an act of writing and it's an act of creation and imagination. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to tie those two things together, and that's what, you know, this exercise of map making brings two characters together to sort of realize some versions of utopias that they might inhabit.
It's an amazing, it's a beautiful story. First of all, beautiful visually and beautiful in the telling of it. But the character, is it Onima Mukherjee?
Onima, yes.
Onima Mukherjee. Yes. What an amazing, that's another person you should bring in back.
Oh my, no, I should. She's great.
Well, talk to me about what she means to you. Because she seems to be the wise person, the visionary.
Oh, yeah. You could also say that, you know, I have been told, like, she's the person in the book that's most like me. Because she's the, like, she's the explicitly trans character. So,
yep.
And I guess sometimes I look like her, and
I knew it. I knew it. I just wanted to get you to admit it on air.
I know.
But it's this amazing thing that she does. Yes. Is that, it's her own blood, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, she never says that it's her own blood. It's the other character.
Yeah.
Who sort of imagines, that's the natural conclusion that you would come to given what she's doing to herself. But I never spell it out.
She draws these maps and talks about imagining the spaces that you want for the future.
Yes.
And the maps are amazing looking. The maps don't look like anything I've seen before. They're just these magical maps that are these beautiful sort of objects that she draws in her own blood.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, it's like, it's a sort of, it's not quite a metaphor. It's something else of like how trans people create their own spaces when there aren't spaces for them in the real world, the mainstream world. We create our own little cultures. And so that's a way I wanted to, you know, of putting that down on paper. And also, you know, it's interesting, like drawing the comic itself is the same act of imagination and creation.
Right.
So, you know, there's various levels. I was drawing the comic within which they're drawing their own comic in a way, you know? So I don't, you know, the map making is also akin to making art and to making comics, to me anyway.
And the maps are, and the architecture that's sort of almost tent-like, but with all these futuristic aspects of it, it's like it's like you're designing stuff for some like futuristic sci-fi film or something. They're really beautiful.
Thank you. I'm very influenced by SF. And
I knew it. Wow.
Yeah, of course. But it's also a way, like I was saying, you know, I got very frustrated with architecture as a profession. And at the same time, I loved drawing architecture. So what do you do with that kind of energy that has no outlet, you know? So I sort of channeled it back into my comics. And that's why it's sort of almost like a hybrid form of like, I mean, it is the overarching like genre and mode is comics, but there are.
I wish there was a better name for that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I used to say there are like Arctic comics, but that's hard to say, so I just stopped calling
yeah, that's
them
not,
that.
That's not going to swing at all.
I know, you get it. It's like people were like, Archie comics?
Oh, God.
No.
Yeah, the Betty and Veronica are in this.
Yeah, they'll show up, I'm sure, as a couple.
One of the other great things about it is that the people that inhabit your comics, a lot of them appear from South Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And that's totally refreshing, too.
Yes, thank you. That was pretty deliberate from the outset because you see, as you were saying, you know, there's so little representation of Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi characters in comics at all. But, you know, so I wanted to, and it seemed fairly natural to me to write what I know and, you know, to tap into my experience as a person of South Asian descent to write these stories. So, yeah, I mean, I was like, like I say, it's fairly natural, but also like some of the themes in the book that you know, the going back to the idea of, you know, these apsaras and stuff.
Yeah.
It draws on a lot of South Asian culture and religion and experience. So, you know, it's a perfect fit for me because the characters embody that kind of a feeling that permeates the whole book, and they're not just there because I wanted them to be South Asian, but the whole book is a fairly, you know, South Asian experience with various layers and flavors that are mixed in.
You also are interested in some sort of strange creatures that are hybrids. Some of them are sort of scary. In Love Song, is that the one with the dog with the human head?
She shows up twice.
Yeah, but then there's another one that has sort of a bird griffin.
Yes, who eventually evolves into, now, they're like mirrors of each other.
The dog with the human head, though, was disturbing.
It was, yeah.
Because it was like attempting to talk and was making these weird sounds.
Yes. I know that creeps me out. It comes from a dream.
when you, I love the way you say that, as if it was somebody else that drew it. Like,
I know.
Isn't that weird?
I know it is.
It's like you're outside yourself when you're creating these.
Yeah. Also, this is another instance. I remember having the dream and saying, thinking, oh, this would, you know, I should like turn it into a comic, but I don't remember how, you know, the idea of like speech and of consciousness came into it. Now I look back on it, I was like, oh, I wish I remember sitting down to write this because it's so odd. And like...
But you sick animals in other ones of your work. You have some beautiful, I recommend people go to your website. Mm-hmm. You have some beautiful, like just single panel works or single artworks. Are you doing more of that now?
It's funny you should ask because, yes, I am doing that now, but it's something that I started doing when lockdown started because I had other plans for the book and, you know, I thought I would be doing that, like going on tour and stuff, but not being able to do that, I kind of was at a loss. And I went back to drawing standalone paintings, small, you know, like 7 or 9 by 9 inch paintings, which I'm still doing now. And that's been a way for me to work through all of this stuff that's happening now.
Because you live in Brooklyn, don't you?
I do, yes.
So you were in the center.
You could say, I mean, yes, we've been hit very hard here.
You have.
So
it was great that you channeled that into your artwork.
Thank you. I mean, that's all I know how to do.
You got nothing else? Yeah, there's a lot of people with that story. Like, I had nothing else to do but work in my garden or, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There's. I love how you stick animals. Like, there's a piece coupled with a dik-dik, which is a kind of tiny antelope.
Yeah.
I actually know that. and I had to actually search to find the dik-dik in the painting. But I think your stills are beautiful. I think they're the standalone. Talk to me about color in your work because it's a very subdued. Sometimes they're black and white with gray washes, but sometimes they're just very subtle colors.
Yeah, so it's interesting with the black and white ones, which are the bulk of the book is well, ostensibly black and white, but I was using some grays, like mid-tone grays, which sometimes skewed like towards sepia and sometimes skewed towards indigo. So it became a little more than monochromatic. It became like almost bichromatic. And we left that in, you know, the public, feminist press, and we decided to leave that in and not print it as pure black and white, but to print it as color to capture that kind of subtle, the undertones within the grays. Then some of the other pieces, the title pages, the cover, the story at Sarah Engine are full color pieces, which, I don't know, like, you know, I think I have like one palette for architecture, which is sort of cool blues and greens and grays.
Yeah.
And then that's sort of, there's punctuation, which comes in the form of like a sari, a piece of clothing. And those are like, you know, sort of slashes or dots of red and stronger colors that are, you know, with the blues and greens as a sort of context for that. I've been experimenting a bit with like plaids of like, you know, sort of, well, plaids in a very like feminine variety. I'm looking at one now, which is like the colors of the trans flag. How they're like overlaid on top of each other.
I didn't expect to hear plaid come out of your mouth, but
no, I did. I know it has connotations, which I didn't.
Bishak, we're completely out of time. We've run out of time, and I had a lot to talk to you about more. I wanted to talk about prefab bathroom, but we're not going to have time to talk about that. I just love the title of that. My guest tonight has been artist, illustrator, and writer Bishak Sum, and we're talking about the graphic story collection, which I strongly recommend. Apsara Engine. Bishak, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. What an honor.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.